Oliver Callan on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by It's For Women. You are not 9 to 5 and neither are we. Conveniently open online 365 days per year, 24 hours per day.
Visiting critic time, we asked a native Dubliner, former international footballer turned pundit, Keith Tracy, to channel his inner Viking for this week's visiting critic experience. So we sent him to Northern Europe by way of the River Liffey, the Viking splash tours. You had a bit of crack anyway, Keith.
I really enjoyed it. It was as a dub, as you said, born and bred in Sherry Street. I had my eyes open to a lot of things. Now I can barely remember some of the things that were said because the tour guide's name was Ken. He was a million miles an hour. There was just stat after stat, fact after fact. And he was in a Bowie tribute band as well. So
really?
Every now and then he'd just break into song as well. So whatever little gem of fact he just gave you would be surpassed by the song he would break into. But
now you're flying ahead on us because you're such a good non-professional critic, although you're actually a professional reviewer because you're a pundit. But you've never done the Viking splash tours before. You're aware of the big yellow thing, which I think are amphibious vehicles from World War II that we took in.
That's
right.
They
can go in the water. Who did you go with?
I went with the wife. Me and the wife, Leanne, were married 10 years we were married 10 years yesterday. So
congratulations.
I used the Monday as my little anniversary.
Happy anniversary, love.
We're going on the Viking tour splash. It was good crack. We really enjoyed it. But yeah, this week in my house has been nothing but celebration.
Lovely.
My 15-year-old, Jerry Ann, has done really well with a junior search. She knocked it out of the park.
Brilliant.
Teddy, my little boy, is 6 today as well. So it's all go, go, go. And Izzy is flying the flag really well in second year. So we're flying. It's all sorts of celebrations.
Dinner non-stop.
Yeah, me and the wife went out last night. It was, all sorts of celebrations. England losing, Ireland winning. It's great crack.
That's why you've got a smile in your face. You're great.
Yeah.
So the Viking splash tours. Okay. So the missus, was she okay for this? Leanne, was she saying, yep, I want to do this? Or was she saying, Keith, what have you agreed to?
No, she was all for it. You know, there was a couple of things that were trying to me, a bit of face yoga, axe throwing and stuff. So when the Viking splash tour came around, my wife said, yeah, okay, I can get into that one with you. So yeah, we really enjoyed it. As I said, as dubs, we feel we know the history of the city.
Yeah.
We're big into me Irish history, but yeah, there was a lot of things I don't know about the city.
What did you learn? What new things did you learn?
Well, a lot of stuff when we went into Grand Canal Dock, they were talking about the U2 studios. There was a lot of stuff about that
Windmill Lane, Windmill Lane.
I wouldn't have been too familiar with that sort of stuff. And I pass these buildings in my everyday life, but never really know the significance of them. So brilliant to have my eyes open with stuff like that.
And that's literally Grand Canal Dock is where it goes into the water.
That's where the splash happens, yeah.
It's Stephen's Green.
Stephen's Green is the starting point. Yeah, you sort of wiggle your way around, you come down, you go over to the north side of the Liffey, you come back over the Samuel Beckett Bridge and then end up in Grand Canal Dock. So yeah, as I say, a million miles an hour with the tour, you get fact after fact and Bowie tribute act getting in. It was brilliant, really, really enjoyed it. And
were there other Irish people on the bus?
There was one other Irish girl, but she wasn't. Me and the wife were the only dubs. There was one other Irish girl, and then the rest were like, I think there was a couple of Finnish, couple of Nordish, couple of Americans on there. But yeah, me and the wife, we were finding it hard to stick with Ken, the tour guide, as I say, million miles an hour. But
I mean, if you couldn't understand,
we were looking around going, if we're finding it hard to stick with them, I can imagine what the other lads are thinking. But again, really good fun. Enjoyed every minute of it.
Did you put on the Viking helmet?
Put the Viking helmet on, I did, yeah. They tried to hit me with tenor as I got off to keep the hat on me, so I had to leave it there. Yeah, but yeah, had
it
on.
That's when they knew you were local.
Stuck
for a tenor.
Some of the stuff is brilliant. While you're stuck in the traffic lights, you know, you get told to give a little roar out of the side of the Jeep every
now
and then.
That's what we know it for, yeah.
Yeah, you give it a little roar to whoever's not paying attention. You give a couple of people a fright, but there was this one girl there, there was one English girl that was really roaring every 2 minutes, and she quietened down towards the end. We were stuck at traffic lights, and one fella jumped off the path and came across and grabbed their arm and roared at her, and she got a real fright.
Oh
so,
my God, really?
Like the public are brilliant as well, because you're stuck in traffic quite a bit as well, and the public get involved with everything. So yeah, again,
that was definitely
really
a local
crack.
Who knows, who's
definitely
probably been
a local,
had by the Viking tour before and they decided to get revenge.
Yeah, I think he's seen it. Come, we gave a couple of people a fright on the way around, but we got a fright ourselves as well. So like I say, really good crack, enjoyed it.
That part of it's probably improved because the amount of people on their phones not paying attention to what's going on.
Yeah, but that's, you can get them while they're looking at their phones, and the tour guide will say, this fella's not paying attention, give him a roar, and you'll see them getting a little fright on the side of the street. So, yeah, brilliant, brilliant stuff.
It's an amazing thing. We were surprised pleasantly to find that it was still running in October, and actually struggled to get a seat for yourself and the missus, because it sells out so much. It's so popular.
Yeah, it's really popular. We got there, our tour started at 4:30, so we had to be there at 4:15 to get ready, and the 4 o'clock was just leaving, and it was absolutely packed, and it was just rolling into tour after tour, and it, like I say, really full, and you can see why. There's a lot of entertainment on it, a lot of historical facts on it, and yeah, you get the splashdown in the Grand Canal as well, which is, it's great to be,
it's unique,
in the water looking out rather than out looking in, you know.
Yeah, yeah, and that's the amphibious nature of the vehicle. And how long is it, by the way, the tour?
It lasts about 70 minutes. Depends. You're probably at the mercy of the traffic going round, but about 70 minutes, an hour to 70 minutes, it'll generally
get the value out of it.
Yeah.
So that's a 5-star review for Viking Splash
Tour. Really
tours.
Enjoyed it. Like I say, it's, you sort of shy away from it, or at least I did, you know, being a dub, you see,
you think,
what are you going to tell me I don't already know about my city? But there's an awful lot I don't know about my city, apparently. So, yeah, really good. And you'll have your eyes opened about a lot of stuff.
The eyes are opened, but in a good way.
In a good way, yeah.
Other things will open your eyes as well.
I'm gathering knowledge as I go. It's great.
That's a big, big review there for that. A wonderful Irish success story as well. So thanks a million for doing the visiting critic on that. Since you're critiquing on football, that's not a proper term, we're having good times, aren't we? We're having a great...
Oh, we've had a good time.
We've had a good night.
Yeah,
we've had a good 10 night. Minutes.
Well, probably a good 45 minutes if you really want to boil it down to that. The first half last night against the Finnish wasn't good enough whatsoever. There was a smattering of boos at half time as well. You're 1-0 down to Finland. The fans are booing you. You're in a dark place.
A bad goal.
It was a bad goal. Yeah. The worrying thing for me is Nathan Collins, when you look at him playing for Brentford in the English Premier League, he looks like a completely different player. But when he gets the Ireland shirt on, and listening to him in the build up to the game, he's the captain now because Seamus is injured, and he come in, he's saying the right things, he's sick of losing, he wants to start winning some games, and then he goes and makes that really silly mistake. And look, we can get bogged down on the mistakes. There's still an awful lot to work on in that Irish team. There's an awful lot of improvement needed, but we're 1-0 down away from home in Finland. We haven't won an away game in the Nations League ever, so I was thinking we're not going to get anything out of this. Yeah. If we're lucky, we'll get a draw, but we managed to just fight our way back into it.
We're playing a bad team that's going through just as bad a streak as we have in the past.
A lot of people have said to me, you know, we're just as strong as the Finnish, and I think that's not how I'd put it. I'd put it as we're just as weak as the Finnish, and we really are right down there at the minute. I think that's our fourth win in 15 games, and two of those were against Gibraltar. One was a friendly against Hungary, who are just going to the Euro, so they weren't fully invested in it. But look, hopefully we've turned the corner. The Greece game is going to be massive on Sunday. They just went and beat the English as well.
Covering that match for Virgin.
Covering that match last night, so I got to see just how good the Greeks actually are. And with their right back George Baldock just passing away, he drowned in his swimming pool at home in Athens on Wednesday night. It was an emotionally charged night last night. So he's only 31 years of age. He drowned in his pool. So tragic, tragic stuff. And I believe the Greeks actually tried to get the game called off, but UEFA said there's not actually another slot to play this game, so you're going to have to play. And the fact
that
the Greeks,
isn't it extraordinary, the emotion that can
emotionally charged. And I think if we go and look at it from Irish eyes, hopefully the Greeks are a little bit hungover, put an awful lot into the game in Wembley against the English last night, so hopefully they'll go back to Athens, suffer a little bit of a hangover, and we can take full advantage. But
how was England last night? I didn't see your research.
They were really poor, really, really poor. It's a little bit, I'm looking at Carsley, and you know, I really like him, I'd love him to go and get the English job, but looking at the evidence of last night, he tried to just shoehorn all the best players that the English have in. Palmer, Foden, Bellingham playing as a false nine didn't really work. And I know Harry Kane was injured, it's an easy fixture to put Harry Kane in, but one of the big boys is going to have to get dropped to bring Bellingham in, and Bellingham for me is brilliant. So you're looking at the likes of a Foden or a Palmer, which is a big decision for Lee Carsley to make. So he'll start earning his money fairly soon.
But they're going through that bit of a transition blip, aren't they?
The English?
Yeah.
But I think so.
But we were so used to Gareth Southgate.
Yeah, and I think Gareth Southgate would have been sitting at home watching the English thinking the one thing that the English public would always criticise the English team was they play with two holding midfielders, and with the amount of attacking talent they have and the talent they have in general, they don't really need to play with the handbrake on. They can just go and blow teams away and win the game. But I'm sure Gareth Southgate was smiling last night like a Cheshire cat thinking, that's why I play with two holding midfielders, because people can go and get you.
Yeah, because they just hang around for as they have done in two championships where they got to the final and just sneak in the goals then when they need them.
But that's it. Yeah, defensively they've been solid enough, but it's in transition when they lose the ball, they don't recover quick enough. Last night they didn't recover quick enough. But what Greece did really well was they sucked the English onto them. They got them to come and press them deep in their half. And when the likes of Declan Rice got up the pitch, they flicked the ball over his head and they swamped the areas, picked up the second balls. Really intelligent game plan from the Greeks. And on paper, the Greeks shouldn't be able to beat the English, but they did, and that should be a blueprint for us moving forward.
Circumstances and everything, and yeah, it should be. But the what struck me is the level at which the kind of the volume, I suppose, which the players celebrated last night, winning the match.
Yeah, and so they showed. You look, it's playing for Ireland is a huge, huge deal. You know, you remember being a kid running around Sherry Street with jumpers for goalposts, and all you want to do is playing for Ireland. Then you get there and you start thinking negatively. You hear the boos. We haven't won games.
Gets in on you and the whole team.
Of course it does, yeah. But you need to have a thick skin. You have to have a thick skin as a footballer. You have to keep doing the right things. And there was some good performances last night. Although I'm saying there's an awful lot of improvement need, there was some good individual performances. I thought Benny playing as a right wing back was good. His strength, his power running forward from there is brilliant. I'd love to see Festi Ebiseli get a start. He's playing for Watford in the Championship now. He come on and set up Robbie Bailey's goal towards the end, set up another good chance for Troy Parrott as well towards the end. And Smodix, I think the one thing that all Irish fans are saying is we want Smodix in the number 10. We need a little bit of class in the middle because we're very workmanlike in there, but Smodix needs to be as close to the strikers as possible, because if we can get him close to the opposition box, he can do something.
Do you know, I want to talk about your own story in football, but I have to take a quick break. We're going to do that break first of all, and we'll come back with Keith Tracy after this. 51551 is the text. We're here with former international footballer and pundit Keith Tracy. 087-032-32-32 is the WhatsApp. It's a great privilege, as I say, to play for Ireland, Keith. You got to do that. What age were you when you made your debut in the green shirt?
I think I was 21. My memory wouldn't be the best in the world, but I was in around 21. Trapattoni managed to call me up. It was, I actually thought it was a bogey phone call. It was Marco Tardelli rang me while I was playing for Preston. I was sitting in my apartment and I got a phone call, and in broken English I got, you've been selected to play against Argentina. And I hadn't got an Ireland cap at this time, and I'd actually fell out with the under 21s manager Don Givens just before. So I did think it was,
you weren't
a
hopeful.
No, I wasn't hopeful. I actually gave Tardelli not a nice response. I thought it was a bogey, and Sean St. Ledger, my teammate from Preston, rang me and said, mm-hmm. No, that is Marco Tardelli ringing you. So I had to ring him back, apologise, and thankfully got myself into the squad. Yeah,
I'm surprised that you weren't so hopeful. I knew you had the rows and everything, but you were playing out of your skin, weren't you, in that stage in your career in the Championship football in England?
I was, yeah. I was doing well for Preston. I was scoring a couple of goals, but I was playing in the Championship, and this was an Irish team with the likes of Damien Duff, Aidan McGeady, Stephen Hunt, Liam Lawrence. There was so many good wingers at the time. I was happy just to go and bide my time. And Duffer, okay. I think he was mid-90s caps. So he was thinking, if I get to 100 caps, I'll call it a day. So I was just biding my time, thinking when Duffer gets to 100, maybe I'll have a chance to break
in. In there.
In hindsight, it didn't work out like that. But yeah, still an absolute pleasure. Brilliant memories to play with Ryan.
But it was a special night for you. But it was a special night in general, wasn't it? That game you first played in Ireland. It was the first match in the Lands End Road, just been done up.
Yeah, the first game in there, we played Argentina. We got beat 1-0 on the day. Di Maria scored a goal that was actually offside. I looked back and he was offside. Heartbreaking stuff. And yeah, the one thing that people always say to me was, well, you got to play against Leo Messi. I didn't get to play against Messi. Messi just came off as I was coming on. It broke me heart. But look, I got to play against Di Maria, Zabaleta, a couple of the other boys. So yeah, great memories.
Do you just kind of let them slide and go, yeah, yeah. Played against Messi.
The one thing, Oliver, that really gets to me is after the game, and I've told the story before, after the game, the Argentinian kit man walked in with a black bag full of Messi's jerseys and just dropped them on the changing room, because obviously everybody's asking for Messi's jerseys after the game. So he just come in, dropped about 10 of them in the middle of the dressing room, and Giovanni Trapattoni is still giving his team talk at this point, and a couple of the lads just dived on them and ended up like a rugby scrum. But I didn't get in the mixer.
Didn't get one.
I was too shy. I didn't get in the mixer, and I've regretted it every day since.
Still bitter about
still
it.
Still bitter. To be fair, I only picked up one jersey in my whole football career, and that was a Robbie Keane jersey when he played for Liverpool. And it was just because I knew Robbie, I was okay to ask for it.
It's funny that you say that, like, you know, the calibre players we had then. I mean, that's what we're always have been depending on, is the churn of players coming out of the Premier League and playing here. We're sort of seem to have gone past the generation where, you know, English, Scottish players who couldn't get into their national squads would get the granny passport out and use it. Is there sort of a, do you think, a generational shift there that we just don't have that anymore?
I think it's a little bit of everything. There's a, obviously, there's a generational shift, but, you know, the Brexit coming in now, the Irish clubs have a much bigger responsibility to get the lads ready for first team football. I mean, when I was 15, I went to Blackburn at 15, went into the academy, and it was Blackburn's duty then to polish me up and get me technically ready to be a first team player. Now, most clubs over here don't really have full time academies. They don't have their own places to train. So, you know, the Irish academies, it's an uphill battle. It's a really big uphill battle. I mean, and we're not just talking about time with the lads. You know, you turn up, you probably have half a pitch to go and train on, which is not great when you've got 22 lads you're trying to train.
Right.
You probably have an hour slot. So yeah, it's not great. Our responsibilities have shifted. We're chasing our tail somewhat, but...
Just copy the GA. I mean, they're exceptional at underage level, all the way up.
Yes, isn't they are.
And look, what we need.
My blueprint for Ireland moving forward would be a GAA style of football. You put it into an area, you flood it, you play high pressure stuff, and you go from there, you put people under pressure. So, look, I don't think it's as doom and gloom as it has been.
No, it's not for a lack of passion, anyway.
It's not for a lack of passion, and I think that's why the blues ring out.
It's nicely fired up at the minute as well, isn't it? Coming to a nail-biting conclusion.
Unbelievable. I'm still sticking with Shelbourne. I've been flipping and flopping all over the place, but I'm going to stick with Shelbourne.
It'd be a better story, though, to...
I just think they've been brilliant. But Rovers have had a monopoly on the league for so long now, been so strong, and I think they've been underwhelming in the league. In Europe, they're obviously a different story. Group stage football, excellent season, 4 million in the bank, excellent stuff from Rovers, but so inconsistent. You could probably say that about everybody. Derry's, Pats have probably the best team in the league right now, but the start of the season has just killed them.
I feel like I could throw anything at you and you'd have a good flow on it. Keith Tracy, player, I'll leave you with this one. A great overview of the games last night from Keith. Really enjoyed your analysis. That's from Anto. So keep at the punditry.
That must be my uncle Anthony, is it?
One more break. We'll be back in a second.